Chapter 39. With what a hatred for vice, and yet a true pity and respect for that grain of virtue that is to be found in us all. Our bloody, daughter-loving Brinvilliers, our warm-hearted, poisonous Lucretia Borgia, above all, what a smart appetite for a cool supper afterwards, at the Café Anglais, when the horrors of the play act as a piquant sauce to the supper. Or, to speak more seriously, and to come, at last, to the point. After having seen most of the grand dramas which have been produced at Paris for the last half dozen years, and thinking over all that one has seen, the fictitious murders, rapes, adulteries, and other crimes, by which one has been interested and excited, a man may take leave, to be heartily ashamed of the manner in which he has spent his time, and of the hideous kind of mental intoxication in which he has permitted himself to indulge. Nor are simple society outrages the only sort of crime in which the spectator of Paris plays has permitted himself to indulge. He has recreated himself with a deal of blasphemy besides, and has passed many pleasant evenings in beholding religion defiled and ridiculed. Allusion has been made, in a former paper, to a fashion that lately obtained in France, and which went by the name of Catholic Reaction. And as, in this happy country, fashion is everything, we have had not merely Catholic pictures and quasi-religious books, but a number of Catholic plays have been produced, very edifying to the frequenters of the theaters or the boulevards, who have learned more about religion from these performances than they have acquired, no doubt, in the whole of their lives before. In the course of a very few years we have seen The Wandering Jew, Belshazzar's Feast, Nebuchadnezzar, and The Assessor of the Innocents, Joseph and His Brethren semicolon The Passage of the Red Sea, and The Deluge. The great Dumas, like Madame Sand before mentioned, has brought a vast quantity of religion before the footlights. There was his famous tragedy of Caligula, which, be it spoken to the shame of the Paris critics, was coldly received, nay, actually hissed, by them. And why? Because, says Dumas, it contained a great deal too much piety for the rogues. The public, he says, was much more religious, and understood him at once. As for the critics, says he, nobly, let those who cried out against the immorality of Antony and Marguerite de Bergen, reproach me for the chastity of Messalina. This dear creature is the heroine of the play of Caligula. Tea matters little to me. These people have but seen the form of my work. They have walked round the tent, but have not seen the arch which it covered. They have examined the vases and candles of the altar, but have not opened the tabernacle. The public alone has, instinctively, comprehended that there was, beneath this outward sign, an inward and mysterious grace. It followed the action of the piece in all its serpentine windings. It listened for 4 hours, with pious attention, avec requiemment et religion, to the sound of this rolling river of thoughts, which may have appeared to it new and bold, perhaps, but chaste and grave, and it retired, with its head on its breast, like a man who had just perceived, in a dream, the solution of a problem which he has long, and vainly sought in his waking hours. You see that not only St. Sand is an apostle, in her way, but St. Dumas is another. We have people in England who write for bread, like Dumas and Sand, and are paid, so much for their line, but they don't set up for profits. Mrs. Trollope has never declared that her novels are inspired by heaven. Mr. Buckstone has written a great number of farces, and never talked about the altar and the tabernacle. Even Sir Edward Bulwer, who, on a similar occasion, when the critics found fault with a play of his, answered them by a pretty decent declaration of his own merits, never ventured to say that he had received a divine mission, and was uttering five-act revelations. All things considered, the tragedy of Caligula is a decent tragedy, as decent as the decent characters of the hero and heroine can allow it to be. It may be almost said, provokingly decent. But this, it must be remembered, is the characteristic of the modern French school, nay, of the English school too. And if the writer take the character of a remarkable scoundrel, it is 10 to 1, but he turns out an amiable fellow, in whom we have all the warmest sympathy. Caligula is killed at the end of the performance. Messalina is comparatively well behaved. And the sacred part of the performance, the tabernacle characters apart from the mere ace and candlestick personages, may be said to be depicted in the person of a Christian convert, Stella, who has had the good fortune to be converted by no less a person than Mary Magdalene, when she, Stella, was staying on a visit to her aunt, near Narbonne. Stella continuant. Voila KG voice savancer, sans pilot a sans rames, une bark portant du homs a du femmes, et spectacle in ui cui mi ravit anchor, tous quater aveando front un oriole d'or du pardon, de rayons de si vive lumiere KG fus oblige a baser la paupière. Et, lorsque g rauvres les u avec effroi, les voyageurs divins et en d'opers de moi. Un jour de chacun du a dans tout sa gloire je te raconterai la marvelous histoire, et tu l'adoreras, j'espère. En ce moment, ma mère, il te suffit de savoir seulement que tous quatre venaient du fond de la Syrie. Un edit les avait bannis de leur patrie, et, si faisant bureau, des hommes irites, sans avrons, sans eau, sans pain et garrets. Sir Yun Friel Barkechui Arrivich, Les Avian de la Mer Pauses Dans un Orich. Mais a pain les guafud il touche les flots cuic antique chant par les saints madelits. Lauragan replies es ales fremissens. Que la mer aplanit ses vagues mugissens. Et cuin salil plus per, reparison dox su, envelope les guaf dun circle radio. ... Junior. Mais ketit un prodige. Stella. Un miracle, ma mère. Leurs first hombres souls, los es a dead or a mere, et du fois shake jour le bateau fut couvert d'un man par la selle du desert. Castains I que, pauses par une main celeste, g les vis a border. Junior. Oh. Disvite la reste. Stella. A lob, trois denter ux quitterin la mason. Mars prit la chemin cui mine terrascan, lazare maximum cellui de massili, et cell cui resta. Quedit la plus jolie, how truly French. Nos facent apular vers la milieu du jour, demanda si les monsu les bois de l'enter cachéen, quelque retraiting connue profond, cui la put separare tout jamais du monde. Aquila si salvant que levate penitor dans un anter sauvage de tous ignore, grot cruci aux flanks de ses alps sublimes, ou legal fates un aero desus des abimes. Il offrit sedicile, et de la lendemain tous du, pour lie guider, nos etions en chemin. Le soir du second jour nos touchums sa base. La, tombant de genoux dans une saint extas, el pria long temps. Pus vers lantern canu, denouin si chasher, el marcha pied nu. Nos prières, nos cris restirin, sans reponses. O milieu de calaux, des epins, de ronces, nos lavimes monter, un baton et la main, et si nescue revio term du chemin, que infinel tomba sans force et sans allen. Junior. Comment la nomadon, ma fille? Stella. Madeline. Walking, says Stella, by the seashore, a bark drew near, that had nor sail nor oar, two women and two men the vessel bore. Each of that crew, 'twas wondrous to behold, wore round his head a ring of blazing gold, from which such radiance glittered all around, that I was fain to look towards the ground. And when once more I raised my frightened eye, before me stood the travellers divine. Their rank, the glorious lot that each befell, at better season, mother, will I tell. Of this anon. The time will come when thou shalt learn to worship as I worship now. Suffice it, that from Syria's land they came, an edict from their country banished them. Fierce angry men had seized upon the four, and launched them in that vessel from the shore. They launched these victims on the waters rude, nor rudder gave to steer, nor bread for food. As the doomed vessel cleaves the stormy main, that pious crew uplifts a sacred strain. The angry waves are silent as it sings. The storm, awe-stricken, folds its quivering wings. A pure sun appears the heavens to light, and wraps the little bark in radiance bright. Junia. Sure, 'twas a prodigy. Stella. A miracle. Spontaneous from their hands the feathers fell. The salt sea wave grew fresh, and, twice a day, manna like that which on the desert lay, covered the bark, and fed them on their way. Thus, hither led, at heaven's divine behest, I saw them land, Junia. My daughter, tell the rest. Stella. Three of the four, our mansion left at dawn. One, Martha, took the road to Tarascon, Lazarus and Maximin to Massily. But one remained, the fairest of the three, who asked us, if by the woods or mountains near, there chanced to be some cavern lone and drear, where she might hide, forever, from all men. It chanced, my cousin knew of such a den, deep hidden in a mountain's hoary breast, on which the eagle builds his airy nest, and thither offered he the saint to guide. Next day upon the journey forth we hied, and came, at the second eve, with weary pace, unto the lonely mountain's rugged base. Here the worn traveler, falling on her knee, did pray while in sacred ecstasy, and, drawing off her sandals from her feet, marched, naked, towards that desolate retreat. No answer made she to our cries or groans, but walking midst the prickles and rude stones, a staff in hand, we saw her upwards toil. Nor ever did she pause, nor rest the while, save at the entry of that savage den. Here, powerless and panting, fell she then. Junia. What was her name, my daughter? Stella. Magdalene. Here the translator must pause, having no inclination to enter the tabernacle, in company with such a spotless high priest as Monsieur Dumas. Something abernacular may be found in Dumas's famous piece of Don Juan de Marana. The poet has laid the scene of his play in a vast number of places. In heaven, where we have the Virgin Mary and little angels, in blue, swinging censers before her. On earth, under the earth, and in a place still lower, but not mentionable to ears polite, and the plot, as it appears from a dialogue between a good and a bad angel, with which the play commences, turns upon the contest between these two worthies for the possession of the soul of a member of the family of Marana. Don Juan de Marana not only resembles his namesake, celebrated by Mozart and Molière, in his peculiar successes among the ladies, but possesses further qualities which render his character eminently fitting for stage representation. He unites the virtues of Lovelace and Lacenaire. He blasphemes upon all occasions. He murders, at the slightest provocation, and without the most trifling remorse. He overcomes ladies of rigid virtue, ladies of easy virtue, and ladies of no virtue at all. And the poet, inspired by the contemplation of such a character, has depicted his hero's adventures and conversation with wonderful feeling and truth. The first act of the play contains a half dozen of murders and intrigues, which would have sufficed humbler genius than M. Dumas's, for the completion of, at least, half a dozen tragedies. In the second act our hero flogs his elder brother, and runs away with his sister-in-law. In the third, he fights a duel with a rival, and kills him. Whereupon the mistress of his victim takes poison, and dies, in great agonies, on the stage. In the fourth act, Don Juan, having entered a church for the purpose of carrying off a nun, with whom he is in love, is seized by the statue of one of the ladies whom he has previously victimized, and made to behold the ghosts of all those unfortunate persons whose deaths he has caused. This is a most edifying spectacle. The ghosts rise solemnly, each in a white sheet, preceded by a wax candle, and, having declared their names and qualities, call, in chorus, for vengeance upon Don Juan, as thus. Don Sandoval Aquitor. I am Don Sandoval de Gito. I played against Don Juan my fortune, the tomb of my fathers, and the heart of my mistress. I lost all. I played against him my life, and I lost it. vengeance against the murderer, vengeance. The candle goes out. The candle goes out, and an angel descends a flaming sword in his hand, and asks Colin, is there no voice in favor of Don Juan? When lo, Don Juan's father, like one of those ingenious toys called Jack-in-the-Box, jumps up from his coffin, and demands grace for his son. When Martha the nun returns, having prepared all things for her elopement, she finds Don Juan fainting upon the ground. I'm no longer your husband, says he, upon coming to himself. I am no longer Don Juan, I am Brother Juan the Trappist. Sister Martha, recollect that you must die. This was a most cruel blow upon Sister Martha, who is no less a person than an angel in disguise, the good spirit of the house of Marana, who has gone to the length of losing her wings and forfeiting her place in heaven, in order to keep company with Don Juan on earth, and, if possible, to convert him. Already, in her angelic character, she had exhorted him to repentance, but in vain. For, while she stood at one elbow, pouring not merely hints, but long sermons, into his ear, at the other elbow stood a bad spirit, grinning, and sneering at all her pious counsels, and obtaining by far the greater share of the Don's attention. In spite, however, of the utter contempt with which Don Juan treats her, in spite of his dissolute courses, which must shock her virtue, and his impolite neglect, which must wound her vanity, the poor creature who, from having been accustomed to better company, might have been presumed to have had better taste, the unfortunate angel feels a certain inclination for the Don, and actually flies up to heaven, to ask permission to remain with him on earth. And when the curtain draws up, to the sound of harps, and discovers white-robed angels walking in the clouds, we find the angel of Marana upon her knees, uttering the following address. Laban Ange. Virch, a cui localis a lalicur mir fudes I salvant offert, mir, que la namalada laurus mir, tant vos aves salfert. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.